10 years before KXL pipeline was coming down.
We just have 10 seconds, Alex.
They were going through the permitting process, so she attacked them, and then that's how we shut them down the first time, was through the permitting process. You just can't take these millionaire corporations on. They have tons of money and lawyers. So she was real strategized. She always used strategy. Well, she didn't just go out for nothing. But
Jody
thank you very
Shambo,
much for having me on
can
here.
Can you tell us if the Biden administration is weighing now what to do with DAPL?
I believe that they are, and I think that they understand that this is a risk that the Energy Transfer Partners knew that they were taking. Energy Transfer Partners said that they spent $7.5 billion. This has to be a statement. If the Biden administration stands for racial justice and equity, if they stand for climate justice,
3 seconds.
When are we going to have justice in Standing Rock? When
Jody
are we going
Archambault
to have the ability
and Alex
to have clean water?
Thanks for joining us. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available at our website. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's 8 o'clock in the a.m. It's Friday. Mind that gap. Because like the man said, we bridging it. Stay tuned.
Good morning, everyone. How's it going? This is KBOO Portland. You are listening to The Gap here on this amazingly bright Friday morning, January 22nd. I'm Tammy. On the line with me is Althea. How are you, Althea?
Hey, I'm doing good. I'm excited that it's light out when we get to talk for once.
Yeah, I mean, summer is approaching. Little baby steps, but it's getting. Basically. And, of course, connecting us into the ether and into the hearts and ears of the listener is Sonia. Sonia, thank you very much. How are you feeling?
I'm doing great. I am here. I'm, well, as I say, going to put it in your ear hole and you can do what you will with it.
Yes, in the ears and into the hearts. It's a one-way track, as they say. I don't know who says
there's
that,
some
but
kind
I understand
of tube
it
that connects them, I'm pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. The ear hole connects to the heart artery, which connects to your soul, because mm-hmm. that's my science.
Yeah.
And speaking of science, yeah, like you're saying, it's getting brighter out there. Days are starting to get a wee bit longer. I personally am a fan of that, and I hope that this Friday is one of peace and tranquility, considering the last 22 days have been quite difficult on all of us. Well, you know, life is difficult in general and different things make it harder. But I think right now there's a lot of collective, I don't say anxieties or something, but there's a collective feeling that I say a lot of people are feeling in the community. And here we are, the 22nd after the Capitol Hill attack. Well, I don't want to say attack. Gosh, that sounds so, well, I mean, yeah, it is. That is the way, a way to describe it. And after inaugurations, here we are. We made it. For now.
For now.
Would you say, well, would you say it's about right, or is that a little too bleak?
Well, I was kind of getting hung up on your use of the word attack, and I was realizing that I felt like it was a strong word, but also not strong enough for that particular instance, which we discussed at length in previous episodes. If you're interested, check it out on kbu.fm/thegap. But today, yes, we're past inauguration, and you know, January 20th was a day that a lot of people have been looking forward to for some time as the end of the Trump era. And you know, Biden got to work right away. There's already things that he's like ripping apart Trump's like old agenda and everything.
Yeah, rescinding and reinstituting or taking apart. It's a lot of. I mean, on the first, we do have a list of at least like 12 things that were done in the undone on the first day of the Biden administration. But before I hop into that, which we will in just a second, I just wanted to take a second to acknowledge the administration, inauguration. And I know that folks have been, you know, kind of talking about their favorite moments. Althea, did you have any favorite moments of the inauguration or anything that stood out to you?
Well, you know, I really enjoyed the fashion. The fashions were really good, and I don't know. Former First Lady Michelle Obama looked incredible. New First Lady Dr. Jill Biden looked great. I really enjoyed the Poet Laureate Amanda Gorman. She did a
22.
Great job. 22. That's
nuts. What were you doing when you were 22, Althea?
Not writing good poems for the whole country to like listen to and reflect on their veracity, you know. And for some reason, it kind of like means more, I guess, when you hear like a 22-year-old like beautifully saying that, you know, like America isn't broken, it's just unfinished. And it's like, dang, that's a good frame that could make me feel better about what needs to get done.
Yeah, leave it to the youth to just, you know, give a different point of view. The one we say all is you know, gone and broken. They're like, no, we actually see a different perspective. And I always feel like it's important to listen to younger generations. Well, look at me, I'm talking like I'm, you know, but even younger generations, I mean, they're inheriting most of the stuff that we're leaving behind. So it's important to see how, you know, how they look at it, how they feel about it. Sonia, was there any moments during the inauguration that stuck out to you?
Well, I would just, not really. I would kind of amplify, I think it was, did this poet, was she doing her own sign interpreting?
I don't think so. I think it was flair. Part of the spoken word.
Oh, because, yeah, I was reading about, apparently there's black ASL.
And oh, yeah, of course.
The interpreter was using that, and people were giving them flack about it, and other people and other black ASL signers, or they're like, well, hey, you know, this is how we do. It's a legit dialect, and you know, die mad about it.
I didn't even hear about that. I want to read a little bit more into that. That's interesting. I was introduced first to Black Sign Language. I don't know if that's the actual name for it, when I was working in D.C. in Gallaudet, because there's a lot of signers and people like go there to study ASL and stuff like that. And they were like, yeah, when you interpret rap songs, or when you interpret, you know, like, you know, with the family and stuff, like, this is what you do. And I was like, wow, that is incredible. I hadn't even thought about that. I'm going to definitely have to look that one up. Love to get someone on the show to talk about that some more too. Thank you for that, Sonia. I love that. You get my mind working. For me personally, I have to say the Bernie memes after the inauguration mm-hmm. is what did it for me. Leave it to the internet to take such a moment, you know, such a critical moment in American history, and then just be like, yeah, but did you see Bernie sitting cold with his beautiful gloves on? No hat, though. You know, he might have not been as cold if he had a hat on, but, you know, I'm not here to tell him what to do.
My favorite meme of that was just one, you know, I enjoyed, like, that there was, like, a history behind the gloves, that they were, like, made by one of his constituents in Vermont.
Yeah.
But there was one meme that was, like, Bernie looks like he's just, like, stopping by. He's, like, got other things to do today. And that was how he responded when, you know, news anchors were like, hey, like, what's up with your gloves? Everybody's so excited about you and your gloves. And he's like, we are in a crisis. The people need $2,000. I'm going to go work on that, please. Please stop talking about my gloves. You know, I made nice at the inauguration. He didn't say that. He's like, I'm going to show my face at the inauguration. 20 minutes top.
Yeah, he was given real vibes, you know. Some would say staff meeting vibes. Other people might say, I don't want to be here vibes. But he showed up. Mm-hmm.
Marshawn Lynch in Seattle Seahawks. I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Exactly.
When he would go to the press conferences, they'd be like, hey, Marshawn, what's up with this? He's like, I'm just here so I don't get fined, and wouldn't answer any of their questions.
But Bernie's right. Yeah, those stimmy checks will be so helpful. I see you yourself, you know, you had a little bit of an issue with them, and I imagine there are people out there that are probably, you know, have dealt with some issues too, as far as just like the wrong address or one number being off in the routing numbers or whatever, and are still waiting for the first round. Mm-hmm. Some are just now getting the second round and the third round. I read recently that they're looking at middle of March, which isn't that far away, but when you have to, you know, eat daily, then...
Are we still doing that? We're eating every day? Dang. Yeah.
I enjoyed it so much yesterday, I might do that today. So I really hope that that promise is one that can be done, like, sooner than later.
About it being $1,400, and like, oh, yeah, we meant $2,000. So it's like, no. No, you meant $2,000 instead.
Like, no, you got the six. I feel like I'm haggling at the market or something. Really, I have a whole bit about it, but I won't even get into it. But something that I will start getting into is some of the stuff. In addition to the possible third stimulus check that is or that did happen within the first 1.5 days of this new administration. And there's a lot of different things on all sorts of different fronts. And there is kind of like a Obama feel to the new regulations and stuff. There are a lot of Obama era guidelines that were either reinstilled or, as much as it can be, considering that a lot of it was undone by Trump. So the first thing that is on the list, and I'm going to try to get through it as fast as I can, is rescinding the 1776 commission, which was going to focus to see on And if America's history is being taught in a quote-unquote wrong way to public schools, and it was in a response to the 1916 project by the New York Times.
1619.
Yes. Well, yes. Excuse me. Yeah, 1916 is, that's Ireland, my bad. Revoking Trump's plan to exclude non-citizens from the census, which,
that's
as
big.
We all know, when we talked about when the census was going on, when we were still in station, I know, Ophia, you're doing a lot of work around that for the newsroom. Mm-hmm. So as we know, the census also allocates money towards different demographics, and to not and to exclude non-citizens from the census will mean no federal money going towards helping out people who, as we can, you know, as we know, kind of really need it. Next thing is prohibiting workplace discrimination for LGBTQ folks. They're going to be included back in anti-discrimination laws, which Trump took away. I don't think anyone with a right mind can justify that, but thank God that is being rolled over.
I got something to say about that.
Yes, please.
Okay, now this is the correct application of all the, you know, remember one of the early things in the 45 era was saying that was banning trans people from military service, and there was this huge wave, like liberals talking about how everybody it turned into a big commercial for military service, you know, for queer people of all sorts, and especially trans people, to like line up to make themselves government property to be used and disposed of at the whim of the state, and to enforce imperial hegemony. And it's like, well, hold on. The issue here is discrimination. So if you're real about it, you know, and when I'd bring up concerns about this, and people would tell me to be quiet. And and it was so galling, and that people were like shouting me down about something about my issue. And it's like, you want to do something for me, then like focus on what you were just talking about, Tammy. Like, that's one of the things I'm going to say Mr. Biden has gotten right is, you know, crack down on, it's got to be about all discrimination in all employment, not just for the military service.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that, like, the justifications about why discrimination is bad shouldn't be different for a military context than any other context.
Yeah, otherwise it's just pinkwashing
military industrial complex or something.
Exactly. Yeah. Marine Colonel Smedley Butler put it, you know, high class hired muscle for the DuPonts and United Fruit.
Mm. So that's one thing that I'm glad that you are, you know, that you're happy about that. There is a couple of other things that Biden is proposing or that signed into effect regarding discrimination, kind of, you know, a response to the social unrest and the, as they call it on the television, the racial reckoning. And I'll get to that in just a second. thing that by the administration is creating is a COVID-19 response coordinator, which, we did have at the beginning of COVID, but then the former administration just abandoned, just stopped going to meetings. This coordinator will report directly to the president on vaccines, testing, PPE production, supply, distribution. And currently it's Jeff Zients, Z-I-E-N-T-S, who was also overseeing Biden's COVID-19 team for the presidential transition. On top of that, there will be I'm sure a lot of people heard about this, the 100 days masking challenge, which is calling for a national face mask and social distancing mandates in federal buildings, federal lands, and by federal employees and contractors. Restructuring federal government coordination to the COVID-19 pandemic, in the White House will be bringing back an Obama-era position called the Doctorate of Global Health Security and Biodefense, which was organized with additional staff within the National Security Council after the Ebola pandemic in 2014. Another big one is rejoining the Health World Organization, or the WHO, which we know Trump was in the process of leaving. So that's kind of a big thing, since the U.S. Was kind of one of the active leaders within the WHO.
WHO.
Yeah.
Those are all, encouraging steps.
Yeah.
These haven't been the same since.
Somebody in charge of it? Man, that's exciting. We're really scraping the bottom of the barrel. Vaccines?
Yeah.
But there's a guy who we could talk to about it now.
Some of these things is just, it's very much like, why was there no one I'm kind of concerned that no one was extension of eviction and foreclosure moratoriums, which would last for at least until March 31st, hopefully even longer. The Department of Ag and Urban Development, as well as VA, will also extend their foreclosure moratoriums for their legally backed mortgages. Another huge thing is the continue on the pause for student loan payments up to September 30th. And right now, they're still talking with Congress about the original pledge that Biden had at the beginning of canceling up to $10,000 of student debt per person. Rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement. And I think that I saw a couple of memes online about Ted Cruz perhaps being a little confused about the Paris Agreement and what that
AOC
means.
AOC really gave it to him on Twitter about it.
I'm really concerned that he thinks that the Paris Agreement is an agreement between America and the Paris
and
citizens.
People in Paris.
I'm very concerned.
Hey, why should Americans be concerned about what the people of Paris think? And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was like, I'm pretty concerned. Do you think that the Geneva Conventions are about the opinions of the people of Geneva? No, that's where the accords took place. Should you be in charge of anything that has to do with government if you don't know that?
Wow, that's crazy. Where's Jeb Bush when you need him? No, I'm kidding. That's really frightening. Okay. Please clap.
Let's all clap for the Paris Climate Accord.
Please.
Clap for the Geneva Convention. I love being instructed to clap.
The Geneva.
Maybe they're like fairies, and so we have to clap for them, because that's how they live.
Good point.
Right, they feed off of the claps, yeah.
Big Peter Pan vibes. Why did I say that?
Speaking of which, the climate change czar will be John Kerry. I haven't heard about him for a while. Glad he's still working. This will take up to 30 days to go into effect. Another big one for a big environmental win is the end of the Keystone pipeline and revoke oil and gas developments at national wildlife monuments. This is
That's
huge.
That's awesome. There was Trump was about to open up a whole bunch of the Arctic National Refuge for drilling. So I think that would fall under this as well. Very exciting.
Yes. The current administration will have to undo or discard more than 100, and this is a quote from Gina McCarthy, who is a climate advisor, over 100
harmful presidential proclamations and permits signed by the Trump administration. And that will reverse the, or Biden hopes to reverse the 2020 decision by Trump, like you just said, to allow land development at Bears Ears and Grand Staircase National Monument in Utah and the Northeast Canyons, which were set aside for wildlife protection by President Obama in 2016. I'm starting to think maybe all good old 45 and Obama may have had some beef.
You're telling me they disagreed? Show me where. Disagreeing.
The press dinner that they had that one time, it's on YouTube if listeners are interested. It's quite jarring to see that. We do have some more stuff. We were saying, the action to advance civil equity through federal government. And so one thing that that they're currently seeing, part of this executive decision, from the Office of Management and Budget, they're going to analyze if federal money can be distributed in an equitable manner into communities of color and others in need. So that's something to keep an eye for. And I'm just gonna just one a few other big things because I don't want to eat up our whole time. Of course, the construction of the border wall has been halted. The priority arrests for ICE will be changed because of Biden, as well as the Muslim ban will end, which is started in 2017, which restricted travel and immigration to the U.S. from Syria, Iran, Iraq, Sudan, Libya, Somalia, Yemen, Eritrea, Nigeria, Myanmar, also known as Burma at some point, Kazakhstan, and Tunisia. Excuse me.
Tanzania.
Yeah. And of course, a huge, huge win. The Dreamers are going to be given the call on Congress to give grant permanent status and pathway to citizenship for Dreamers who are kids, people. Well, I guess now they're adult or somewhat adults, young adults. Who came here as undocumented children, but grew up here, went to high school here, did everything here, and still, because of good old bureaucracy, have not been able to become citizens. So creating a pathway to citizenship is huge. And it's also people that have been here for a very long time. I can go into it. Immigration is something I hold very dear, because that's how my family got here. So I'm glad that people are...
Hey, dig it. That's how my family got.
Administration. Yes.
That's how my family got here, too.
Something can all get in. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of some of the things that the administration has done or undone in the last 2 days. lot more done in the first day. So that's kind of huge. I hope that this momentum keeps going. One last thing I want to personally add before we change the subject is I really hope that Biden does honor one of his campaign promises of making sure that there are no more kids in cages once he becomes president. So that's something I'm still waiting on. And if he really wants to be a friend, he could also close down Guantanamo. But we'll see about that. Just big hope. Yeah. I'd love. I feel like I've just been talking so long. I'd love to hear your thoughts, Althea.
Yeah, I know yesterday I was going to add one thing. I know some immigration advocates were not happy with some of his first day stuff because he didn't like tackle Dreamers completely on that day. But yesterday he put out a 100-day like deportation hiatus, like nobody's getting deported for 100 days while they try to like get on top of tackling immigration. Which, like, even the idea that immigration is something that is going to be, like, reformed or changed out of the current system of children in cages and the Muslim ban was like, whoa, I feel like we really haven't talked about that in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's very cool. It's very cool to see, but, you know, with all of these executive orders, and, like, the idea that this much can get done in a day to undo what has previously been done for everybody who's impacted by these particular issues, like, that's awesome. Hey, guess what? You're in the census, even if you're undocumented, and that's really great, and we can just end that conversation. But in terms of making things permanent, in quotes, I guess, or making lasting change down the line, it has to come from Congress. And, you know, the Democratic control is on a thin margin. And so I'm really hoping that they enshrine these things in places other than the executive branch. You know, extensive use of the executive order really is something that has only happened since 2000. And Obama was one of the ones to use it most extensively first. Like, it wasn't necessarily like a major power in the history of presidents. So I would really like to see this stuff enshrined in, you know, congressional lawmaking rather than just in, you know, the federal branch of the government, or in the executive branch, which controls all these federal agencies, which definitely has impact. But, like, let's make clean the slate, make it so that, you know, you can't just have one person come in and undo all of it.
Yeah, because then in four more years, it's, you know, it's just getting flip-flopped around, which is not good for the country. It's not good for the people, for the state of mind, and all of that is going to trickle down. Kind of hate saying trickle down, but it will trickle down to the economy, to the power. You know, since America has always been like a
ripple out power.
Ripple out. Thank you.
There we go.
Thank
you. I love that. Good job, Sonia. Well, and that's the other thing is, and we've talked about this before, but that, you know, in terms of holding people in power accountable, it's not just the president that has political power, right? It's also the House of Representatives and the Senate that are accountable for these issues and making sure that the rights of people are protected.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, just... Yeah, and if it doesn't get if it doesn't stay, then we'll just, you know, there. I mean, countries get toppled over all the time because of, like, you know, regime changes. You know, and I would hate to think that, you know, the United States will end up having to be at the whims of the president, because, I mean, there's so much that was created for that not to happen. So I think that kind of reverting back to that might be safer for us in the long run. Well, it might take a little bit longer for things to get done because it does have to go through Congress and everything, but it's safer for us in the long run to make sure that these laws are enshrined into our, you know, into law of the land.
Well, that they are laws rather than the president saying, because I said so.
Yeah. And this is actually kind of rippling outwards towards our next subject, which we'll be getting into in just a moment after this beautiful midway song. Before I get into it, just want to remind you all, you're listening to The Gap here on KBOO Portland. I'm Tammy. Online with me are Althea and Sonia. We were just talking about Biden's first day, the stuff that he undid and redid. Excited for the future. We'll be back in just a moment. Thank you very much.
Feel unhappy.
The beautiful tunes. Highly enjoyed that. Yeah, we were very much enjoying that. I'm happy that I got to share that with you. I was picking out the songs for this morning, and I was like, oh, yeah, this is it, as I was sobbing and sending it over to you. So I'm glad that we're feeling that. Lots of changes, lots of things moving and grooving. And Althea, you, before we went to our musical break, we were talking about kind of like the structure of government, and you're giving us a tiny little bit of an example of kind of like what we're going to be talking about now, which is civic literacy, media literacy.
Sonia, did you want to jump in there? Sorry, I don't know. I might be getting an echo here.
Oh no, I was just. It sounded like y'all were fumbling for the term, so I was.
Oh, okay.
I was still singing the song in my head. I was like, mm-hmm. Oh, no, focus. Media literacy and civics education.
Althea,
would you like to explain that?
Sonia's got a rendition going. Pivoting to our second topic of the show today, there has been a lot of talk recently about, you know, how do we change the conditions of American society that led to the rise of Trump, that led to the insurrection, and that kind of thing. And one proposal that is out there, and this is like, you know, even before the election when we were having all the kerfuffle about mail-in voting in other states, is that, you know, there needs to be, like, people need to be educated on, you know, when I say media literacy, it sounds really, really boring. But what that really means is, like, you know, understanding how information is spread and how to recognize good information and how to recognize iffy information. And then understanding how that applies to your civic responsibility of, you know, voting for whoever you want to vote for and, you know, being part of a representative government and whatnot. So I have a little clip here for us. Back in May of last year, which is wild to say that May of last year was a time. May of last year, I interviewed our current Secretary of State, Shamia Fagan, back when she was a candidate. And I asked her about, you know, what can we do to make our elections more secure? And she had a proposal related to this. So I'll let that clip roll and then we'll talk.
Oregon Secretary of State is a position that wears a lot of hats in state government compared to, you know, secretaries of state in other states. The secretary oversees elections, audits, public records, the Business Services and Corporations Division, as well as sitting on the state land board. But the responsibility for overseeing elections is often what first comes to people's minds. What do you see as the biggest threat to our electoral security currently, and how would you like to address that?
We are lucky here in Oregon that we have very secure elections. We use paper ballots. Our vote counting machines are not online. The biggest technical threat is through our online voter registration system. We need to shore up the security around our online voter registration system. That's where our biggest vulnerability is in a literal sense. But the reality is, in a day and age where people can share stuff on social media and misinform people, really misinformation is the biggest kind of, when you really look at the broad sense of the threats to our democracy, because you don't have to actually hack a voting machine or actually interfere in an election if you can just spread misinformation and make people believe that you did. And so one very underutilized office in the Secretary of State's office that I want to significantly bulk up is the office of the Director of Civic Education. And if your listeners have even heard of this office, they might think of like elementary school curriculum or the Kid Governor program. But we need re-education for all Oregonians about how to spot misinformation, how to check to make sure their news sources are credible. Because the reality is, I'm more likely to get misinformation via text or social media from my aunt than I am from my niece, because she grew up in a generation where, you know, if it looked like Walter Cronkite said it or ABC News said it, then it was true. But she'll often send me stuff that will look really alarming, but she won't have caught that the website is like one letter off or two letters off from a credible website. So I think that we need to really bulk up the director of civic education, because part of our civic life is making sure that we're using credible information, that we're at least sharing the same set of facts, so that when we, you know, engage in civic discourse and civic dialogue, we're at least operating on the same set of basic facts and true facts.
And how could we implement that, I guess, in a concrete sort of way?
Yeah, well, there's, like I said, there is in the Secretary of State's executive team, there already exists the position, the Director of Civic Education. And so we essentially need a campaign to show folks. I mean, there's actually some curriculums in other states that they've introduced that have been really successful in kind of helping people spot misinformation, spot news story, you know, like incorrect news stories, or and not, you know, credible news outlets making a mistake. We're talking about the intentionally false information that gets spread on social media. And they're essentially, they've developed a whole curriculum around helping people spot that and, you know, use, you know, social media campaigns and other type of things to get that information out to Oregonians, because that position already exists in the Secretary of State's executive team. It's just not being used right now for anything beyond kind of elementary school curriculum in the Kid Governor program. We can use that position a lot more.
So that was me talking to our current Secretary of State, then candidate Shamia Fagan, about changing our approach to civic education and including, you know, how do we treat misinformation? How do we recognize misinformation online? And so, you know, that's like one approach to sort of healing some of our ills. And so we want to know from the listener, if you're out there, what's up? What do you think about that kind of idea? Like, would you take a class that was devoted to that? And this is my other question. I think it's easy to understand or outline in a specific way what I do understand about the internet, but what don't you understand about the internet and how the internet is such a broad term. So like not your router per se, but like information on the internet, social media, how people conduct themselves. What don't we understand about that? If you would like to give us your thoughts on that, please do give us a call, 503-231-8187. We'd love to hear from you.
That was a great interview. Thank you for that, Althea. And while callers are calling in at 503-231-8187 to discuss about whether they would take such a class or what they don't understand about the communications through internet, Althea, would you like to start off with your answer?
Yeah, because I posed it, and then I was like, dang, what do I not understand about about the internet? And, I mean, there's innumerable things that I don't understand, but in terms of, like, thinking about misinformation, I don't really understand necessarily, you know, where misinformation comes from. Like, is it from people misreading things and making mistakes and sharing it broadly, or is it largely like intentional? And if people are creating it intentionally, like what do they have to gain? That's one thing that I was thinking of. Or, you know, what are the strategies that are used to make something, you know, that's not real become so viral and shared so broadly?
I think also with us a lot, you know, the fact that misinformation is something that is people are becoming more and more aware of, but in an era where you have one thing that can either have ripple effects, you know, for you in real life, how come some people choose this route? How come some people choose the other route when all they're looking at a machine that has all of the same information, you know? That's something that I've wondered, I guess not necessarily specifically about the internet, but if I had to talk specifically about the internet, it would be the deep web. I don't get it. I don't get the deep web versus the dark net. I don't understand how I don't understand the difference, and I don't understand it. I don't know if it's bad or good. I know those are just kind of like words, but we do have John on the line, I believe.
Hi. I was looking on the internet, and there was an opinion piece about this guy really ragging on Zuckerberg and some of these dot-com, you know, captains of industry. and how they should be also be implicated with Holly Cruz and Michael Flynn's brother, who was in the room when the Capitol was being attacked. And they were just sitting around, let it happen. And this guy was like head of the Department of Defense. But getting back to the social thing, when I was watching the storming of the Capitol, I was thinking about the Social Dilemma movie. And this, these Facebook, Instagram, whatever you want to call it, they've been weaponized. And I really think that there should be a lot of accountability on, you know, these captain of industries, because they're letting all this smut and all this vile thing go through. So what they're just as much as cheerleaders as those people in Congress and the Senate. And that's all my comment is. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, appreciate it. We did go a little bit more of a deeper dive about accountability for social medias and all in our last episode, KBOO.FM. You can look it up, search in The Gap. But I think I tend to agree. I think there is some sort of accountability that needs to get done. Because Althea, you made a great point last week when you said, you know, well, they're kind of just siding with the incoming government. So they're like, oh, nothing to see here. Look at us. We're on your team mm-hmm. now, which is problematic in itself. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Well, and that, you know, it can be kind of like two sides of the same coin, I guess, or like two, mm-hmm. two, you know, equally valuable approaches to, you know, making sure that misinformation doesn't have such a grip on our politics in the future, which is, as John mentioned, holding people accountable who spread this misinformation, who encouraged the Capitol insurrection, who like allowed this kind of thing to happen, and then also empowering the individual to understand better what their information is and what the streams of information that are coming to them and how credible they are. So if you have thoughts on that, give us a call, 503-231-8187. I think they're both valuable, like, you know, necessary ways to like approach this, right? Because as we were kind of talking about last week too, this sort of like, I don't know, paternal part of the government being like, oh no, don't look at that. That's your mere mortal eyes can't be trusted. there's a real part of that people I think rightfully chafe against, like mm-hmm. whoa, don't you know, let me do my own thing, let me figure it out for myself. We got a caller on the line. Hey Zach, how's it going?
Pretty good, how are y'all doing?
Doing all right. What you got?
All
for
well
us?
Nice. Yeah. I was listening to what you were saying about kind of education in regards to interpreting media, and it made me think about a conversation I had with my brother last night about what is the solution to all this. And so I thought I'd throw it out here. He said the fairness doctrine is something that we might need to bring back and consider enforcing, where media would basically present two sides to each topic. But I don't know, I just wanted to throw that out, see what y'all thought about it.
Yeah, appreciate it. I think that's an interesting.
Well, that's what the BBC does, right? I think that that's like part of their thing.
It's not required in the U.S. anymore. But you know, speaking to journalists sort of having that self-reflection moment, part of the culture, you know, and I guess we're talking like very mainstream, obviously not Fox News or MSNBC here, but that they. And that holding both sides equal when one side is not grounded in fact is also part of the problem that got us here.
Well, that's not what the fairness doctrine is. It's like
it's to present. Oh, go ahead.
Requiring like the whole like equal time thing, you know, kind of like how when
still required, by the way.
Yeah, but. Having that, but it is it. when people are exposed to, more than one, a set of, when more than one premises, see, and that's part of one of the more egregious effects or deleterious effects of the abandonment of the fairness doctrine, is that the entire spectrum of acceptable debate has been drastically narrowed. And it's like, increasing the military budget by 10% instead of 30% is called slashing military spending. Because we're not allowed to, again, this gets to what I was bringing up last week about private platforms, deciding, they're going to decide, editors directors, news directors, deciding how much, what ideas get to be discussed, what is the range of debate, and is the acceptable the acceptable spectrum of perspectives that are allowed to be aired. And so when everyone who has access to the audience, the general public, are all working from the same assumptions, then those assumptions are never challenged in any meaningful way.
I'd love to talk more about the FCC Fairness Act doctrine more, because I think that is a interesting point to bring up, because unlike Equal Time, which is being a radio station, cable is something that they follow. It is different in the sense of it's not like a conversation about things that pertain to public interest in the sense of like controversial issues and stuff. And I wonder if we neglect to have opposing views on one platform that isn't privately owned, like you said, if silencing voices or not having them as part of the conversation, if it pushes what would otherwise be somewhat centrist views into the fringes, into like creating a marginalized community that would then end up being led by the worst of the worst or something. I think there is history for both. Like, we can definitely dissect the history of it and how it's being done in other places. Like I mentioned, the BBC. Although we do have another caller on the line, I believe. Still there with us?
Yes.
Scott, are you there? Hey.
Yes, I'm here.
This is Brad.
Excuse me.
How's it going, Brad?
Oh, fine. How are you doing today?
All's well, thank you. We got a couple of minutes, and we'd love to get your comment.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I was calling in about the fairness doctrine, and I think you covered that really well while I was listening to you there. However, I think that one of the things that you're possibly missing is that a lot of these cable networks that are privately owned are based in infotainment, and they're serving a demographic that's making them money, and there's the profit motive. And a lot of these infotainment things, just sell information, or they sell ideas, and that's the whole idea. They're just dispensers. So then, so that's where I don't think the fairness doctrine would really work really that well, because they are private and they are, governed by the commerce clause and other things like that. So I just wanted to put that out there, and I really appreciate your show, and thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. Infotainment, it's a powerful, I forget what the type of word that is, but that it combines information and entertainment, and that, because there is that profit motive, the sensational becomes more valuable than the truth in some cases.
Yes, as they call the yellow journalism, good old Hearst. Yeah, that's a really, really good point, and how to go around it. I mean, we have all this information because it's something we had in the past, and how will, is it something that could get applied but needs to get reshifted a little bit or changed or something?
Yeah.
We do have Gordon on the line for the last few minutes of the program. Gordon, how are you?
Hi, good morning. So this is outside of, I think, but part of what you guys have been talking about. But Biden did a thing yesterday with the transgenders, and I just transgender group part of the population. And I'm just concerned about, and wanted to hear what your ideas of having men, physical men, that connect.
No.
Yeah.
No, don't bring that attitude here.
Gordon, I would encourage you to do some reading, because that is not the the fundamental misunderstanding of transgender people and what their role might be. So call back if you do that research.
Research is important.
Yeah.
And interesting, this. So going back to what we were saying, it seems like this the Fairness Act is something that a lot of people are thinking about or you know, kind of revisiting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that maybe that shows that people are feeling as though they're not getting honest or balanced news, you know? And we do see that a lot of stuff that happens online not trickles down. What was it?
Ripple outward?
Ripples out.
ripples out. Say echoes. It ripples out to real life, and that's a huge issue. Another thing, just going back to your question, another thing that I'd like to understand more about, like, misinformation is how do people... I understand, like, the general premise of how do people get radicalized, but how does that happen when you have... It's, again, you go on a certain platform, and it's going to have things that are bombastic, you know, both camps of thought, but knowing that you have that on that same platform, how does it happen that people are promoted to choose one way or another, as opposed to, you know, you just read this or you just saw this video, here's something that's the opposite, maybe it can give you, like, some sort of balance, something. But does that go back to, like, literacy or media literacy, or like, you know, the combination of civics and media literacy? Because there are, like, .gov websites,
I think a really important,
I don't see those getting circulated.
Really important part of all this is the misinformation that that fairness requires making room for bad information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's definitely something that, like, in invoking the fairness doctrine, that's kind of like the red flag that comes up for me.
Mm-hmm.
Not all sides have equal merit, and that is something that needs to be discussed.
And
in good faith, like you were saying,
it worked. Yeah. It worked so well for so long until Reagan's FCC dismantled it and threw it out, and it was. People who have studied it more closely and for longer than I have draw a very intimate connection, if not outright causation, between the elimination of the Fairness Doctrine and the rise of right-wing hate radio.
Mm.
Like Rush Limbaugh rose when he did because he couldn't have risen the way he did doing what he was doing under the Fairness Doctrine. The Fairness Doctrine made Rush Limbaugh impossible.
That's very interesting.
And by extension, you know, and like Don Imus a bunch of other people for whom the only adjective I can come up with at the moment became, here we go. We can make See, this was a this was part of the terms of holding a broadcast license.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just as one of the terms of a broadcast license is that you don't use the you don't use certain adjectives as appropriate and apt as they may be.
Yeah.
On the air during a certain time, on certain, you know. That's a term of holding up a broadcast
on our
license.
Here, unfortunately. Yeah.
Yes, Sammy, we're going to have to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Sure. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And there's definitely going to be a part two to this bad boy. It's a great discussion we're having here. Again, you can check us out on the web, kboo.fm/thegap. I am Tammy. On the line with me is Althea and Sonia. We're wishing you a great, fantastic, and happy Friday, rest of your weekend, and everything in between.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act